Oh, what to talk about? It's a news according to me. Good morning. It is 9:35. Is this Thursday already? Thursday morning. December 9th, 2021. I'm in the home studio today. Not the worldwide headquarters studio, just my home studio. And in my cup, there's not going to be any delay on just telling what's in the cup. I got the very little hot chocolate left here with a little bit of Cinnabon creamer in it. And in fact, that's the last swig right there. It's gone. However, don't worry. Don't fret. Don't fret, little camper. I got some other backup stuff here in another cup. I have two cups today. The other cup contains a mixture of orange juice and peach mango V8 fusion. If this won't make you wake up, I don't know what will. It's got some pucker factor. Wow. Makes the old pucker happen there. Yeah. Ooh. Makes the eyes light right up. Combination of mostly sugar and a tangy, orangey, peach mango flavor. That'll do it to you. So this morning I'm trying something different, something new. I've got these new contacts. I've had a problem with contacts recently. Well, in the past few years. I used to wear contacts. I started wearing contacts back in the 70s. And I actually was one of the first people in the country to get soft lens contacts back when they first came out. Everybody's wearing hard lens contacts. My brother and sister both, I think they both got contacts, and they were wearing hard lens contacts. And I just remember them being in such pain all the time. When they first started wearing them, it took them several weeks to get used to them. And of course, they'd put them in. You had to put them in just the right spot. If you put them in wrong, it would be painful. It was difficult to get them in, get them out. And one of the advantages to hard lens contacts, though, is that they maintain the shape of your eye. In fact, your eyes don't really change. They didn't change very much over the course of the, you know, they would get new contacts, they'd get them polished or whatever. It was actually a very hard lens. It was literally, I think it was actually made out of some kind of, it was either acrylic or some kind of glass, actually. The original contacts that were made, the first lenses that were popped in somebody's eye was actually an actual glass lens. Really weird. However, these hard contacts, well, they came out with this new thing. I think it was also in the 70s. And it was called radial something something, keratotomy something. I don't know what it was. They didn't make any incisions. What they did is they took lenses, hard contact lenses. You'd put them in your eye for a couple weeks. It was kind of like Invisalign for your eyes. Put these things in your eye, and they would reshape your eye. So in other words, you'd be in great pain for 2 weeks. And then you'd take those contacts out, and you put some new ones in, and you'd be in pain again for 2 weeks. Just about the time the pain would subside, then you put some new ones in. And what they were doing was actually reshaping your eye to the point where you didn't need to wear the contacts. You could see without the contacts in. Now, you had to wear retainers, I think once a week or something like that. And of course, then you go through pain again. So the more you wore the retainer, the less pain you'd go through when you were wearing them, because they were, you know, you let your eye kind of start to go back into shape, and it's going to be a problem. But I knew a guy when I was learning how to fly. I think I was working as a gas pumper at an airport. I was pumping gas in airplanes. And this one pilot had done that. He could literally go into his eye doctor, or his eye checkup, his FAA exam, and not have any corrective lenses. His vision was 20/20, uncorrected, because he had these kind of like braces for your eyes. All he had to do was keep wearing them, which was interesting. I mean, he would. I found that fascinating. However, at the time, I was wearing soft lens contacts, and because I got mine back in like junior high, and that was like 1.5 million years ago. The lava from the original creation of the Earth was just cooling at the time I got my soft lens contacts. It was, I think it was, when was it, 1970-something, 1972, is that right? I had to sign a waiver. My parents had to sign a waiver for me to get these soft lens contacts. It was an experimental thing. It was part of a study. So it was like, some kind of weird thing. Anyway, so I got these things. Of course, I had this little enclave thing. You had to put them in to boil them, to sterilize them every day. Now, when we first got the soft lens contacts, they were good for a year, or about that. You keep the same lens for a year. And they were thick, big thick things. Put them in, took up the whole pupil. So it was a different day and different time. Well, they've made some extreme advances now. And then, of course, then they started coming out with disposables. You'd wear a pair and you'd throw them away, because they became so cheap. They could manufacture them so cheap that they just, we're just going to make disposables. You just get a new pair every day instead of trying to clean them. Well, and then they came up with some other things. Then they had this thing called a toric lens that would actually adjust to your eye. It had a particular shape, and as you were wearing it, it would always go to a certain place in your eye, which helped with astigmatism and some other issues, and even some near and far sightedness issues. And of course, they came up with monovision, where you have one eye that's set up for 20/20 for distant vision, and the other eyes look for up close vision. Well, I think I have what I have right now for a while, but then about 5 years ago or so, I would put my contacts in, but my right eye would just get really irritated. I don't know what it was, but it would get painful. After about 2 hours, it would get painful. Couldn't stand it. And I found this one company that made a lens that was actually comfortable. I could wear it all day long. It wouldn't bother me. Now, there was an issue, though. It was not a toric lens. It was just a regular lens. And I had to wear readers because I was over 40 and I was starting to get to that point where I couldn't see anything up close without taking my, if I'd looked over the top of my glasses, it was fine. Now, I tried these toric lenses once, and they made my eyes hurt. My right eye was in pain. After about 2 hours, I couldn't stand it. The biggest problem with glasses, especially if wearing this mask thing, is that your glasses steam up all the time, let alone this time of year when you're coming in and from outside, your glasses are going to steam up anyway. But then you have this mask on that's blowing all that hot, moist air up on your glasses. And even when you're not outside, it's going to steam them up sometimes, just because you get running around and doing something and you're going to breathe and whatever. So running through an airport is not fun with a mask on. That's why mine usually tends to fall down over my nose. Yeah, but below my nose, I should say. And then I can breathe again. Just be normal. So I had this this eye doctor who came up with a solution, this one type of lens that has a toric lens, combined with a little bit more adjustment with near and far sightedness. So my one eye, I don't know which one it is even. I can't even really tell which one is supposed to be near and which one's supposed to be far. Just got them yesterday, and I haven't worn contacts for a couple of years, actually. Maybe one lens in the last 2 years. Or one pair of lenses. So I got these new lenses now. So I'm trying those out here in the studio this morning. And normally, with contact lenses in, I cannot see the computer screen very well without at least minimal readers on, like really low, like one power or something. Now, I am looking at the screen, reading everything on it right now. And I can even pick up my phone and read my phone and the text on my phone, which I was not able to do without readers. I just got these yesterday, and unfortunately, I put them on stupidly last night. It was dark outside. Of course, it gets dark here about 4 o'clock in the afternoon because it's wintertime and we have the, you know, daylight savings time stuff. And so it was dark already, and the we're moving some cars around and had to do some things with some maintenance issues that turned out to be a non-issue, I think. We're supposed to take this one car over to a mechanic to have him take a look at it, because I was kind of befuddled on what it was until I think I fixed it right before I took it over there. And so I went and drove it around a little bit. So we were going to go to dinner, and we're going to drop the car off over at the mechanic's place over there, and then go to the dinner. So I wasn't really driving very far without, I was going to be with my wife on the way over to the dining establishment. So I wasn't going to be alone if I had a real problem with the contacts. I kind of had her there to just get it driven home. I did take my glasses, and I took a pair of contact lenses lens case. And I took my readers and all that stuff in case I had a hard time seeing. So I was kind of prepared for any contingencies that might happen other than, if I happened to run over a squirrel or something. Because I couldn't see it. Thinking it was a mailbox. Or was it the other way around? Run over a mailbox thinking it was a squirrel. I don't know. Whichever way that works. Either way, it's interchangeable. So I ended up getting the restaurant. I looked at the menu. I ordered my food, ate my food, drove back home. Actually, I didn't drive back home. We drove back and I picked up the car again. I said, what? I'm just going to take it out and drive it around for a while. I took it out on the highway, drove it as fast as I could, drove it out all over the place, drove it everywhere I could, put some gas in it, went and drove it some more. And guess what? No problem. Not a bit of problem. Rock solid. I had this little overheating issue. And I believe the thermostat was stuck. I tapped on it. I put a wooden dowel rod on it. And I tapped on it with a hammer, and then all of a sudden things seemed to work again. So something happened there with that sticky thermostat thing. Not sure why it was sticking. That's the problem. And I'm not sure when it's going to stick again. That could be a problem. But at least now I know if it happens again, I know what the deal is. So I'm going to drive her car for a while. See if I can get it to do it again. So all this said... You're saying, Kevin, what does this have to do with what's in your cup? Well, it doesn't have anything to do with what's in my cup, and it has nothing to do with the news, according to me. But I do want to talk a little bit about a few things that are just driving me nuts. There's so much going on in the news, and I'm trying to figure out, and I know that part of that is the desire of the leftists to overwhelm the system, to have so much news in the news cycle that they can get away with pretty much anything they want to, just by that way they can control the news cycle with stuff that doesn't matter while these big things are going on. Things are happening. Like this omnibus bill. Yeah. Here's the definition of an omnibus bill. An omnibus bill is a proposed law that covers a number of diverse and unrelated topics. Sounds great. Omnibus is derived from Latin, and it means to, for, by, with, or from everything. An omnibus bill is a single document that is accepted as a single vote by a legislature, but packages together several measures into one or combines diverse subjects. In other words, it's a big old fat bill about nothing that covers so much stuff that you can't get into it, and you have to pass it in order to find out what's in it. Now, speaking of Nancy Pelosi, this woman has gone insane. This woman has no business being the leader of anything. She shouldn't be leading a kindergarten class, okay? I kid you not. This woman has gone insane. She is right up there with Joe Biden. There's a guy I listen to quite a bit, H.A. Goodman. He's got a thing on a YouTube channel. He's got a couple YouTube channels. And I basically listened to the one he originally kind of started. He was a big Bernie supporter back in 2016, and then he is kind of he's the one thing I've noticed. There are some leftists and some people on the left, which would be leftists as well. Some liberals. I want to say yeah. I've noticed that if they are seekers of the truth, if they really do want to know what the truth is, and they start to open their eyes to what is really happening, and they're not delusional. They don't just believe in, they don't just repeat the talking points and go along with the narrative. They start to realize the delusion, the hysteria, and how it affects the vision. As I was talking about vision earlier, see how I tied that in there? So you thought I wasn't going anywhere with that whole thing about my contacts. Now I'm going to tell you about how you see things clearly. Because they, you know, H.A. Goodman ended up, you know, as he was seeking the truth, as he was learning more about Hillary and seeing what was going on, and seeing, you know, he was kind of a, he never really liked Hillary, but he was supporting her. But he was a big Bernie supporter. When he saw the sham that was Bernie, he started to understand the fraud, the Democrats, the whole Democrat Party, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and everything else that was going on there. He started realizing, hey, this is baloney. This is a big act. This is all a phony fraud scam that they're perpetuating on the American people. So, and I've seen this happen various times. Look at Rubin. Is it Dave Rubin? David Rubin? Even Monopolis or whatever that guy's name is. Yiannopoulos. And Rubin. You're kind of seeing this happen a little bit with Seth Rogen right now. Not Seth Rogen? Not Seth Rogen. What's the guy's name? There's another Rogen. The fighter guy. That's Seth? That's not Seth. What's his name? I hate to confuse the two because the one guy's an idiot and the other guy's at least cuts through the baloney. Oh, he started confronting Sanjay Gupta. Just called it out for what it was. Now, granted, he's on his own turf and he's on his own show, on his own podcast. You're in his yard, you know. He's the big dog there. Like he even had Jack Dorsey there one time, started confronting him about stuff. And it's interesting to see these people. They tend to have a tendency to, you know, as the left continues to go off into wacky land, the contrast becomes even greater. The divide, the cavern, it becomes greater and more well-defined. As I was listening to a few things today, I kind of had to take a step back today. And here's what I don't often share this kind of thing. But I usually listen to the news and I spend some time kind of reflecting on what is God saying to us in this time? What is he saying to me and what is he saying? And what's happening in my life? What's he saying? One of the things that I found kind of interesting people always struggle with how God is speaking to us today. And I think Jonathan Kahn probably was one of the people who kind of reinforced this idea. But there have been several people in my life that have, throughout my life, my long, very long life. I was a believer at a young age. And I've gone through ups and downs in my closeness with God, but kind of comes in waves, you know. Be really intense, have a really intense relationship with God for a while. Really latched on and really digging in. And then you kind of, much like the children of Israel, throughout the whole book, the Old Testament, as we call it, the Old Testament or the First Covenant, the interesting way that they would kind of, you know, they would repent, come back to God, kind of do their thing, and then they would They would be blessed, and in their blessing, they would kind of drift away from God. And I would hope to, I'd like to think that I'm a little bit more stable than that, and that even though all the blessings start flowing, that I don't latch onto those so much and see that as an approval, because I know better than that now. I used to. Just having the blessings, what you call blessings, what we call material blessings, we have a tendency to think that because we're materially blessed, then we must be approved, or that's a sign that God is blessing us. It's the least of the things He wants to bless us with, actually. It's helpful, sure, but it's not necessarily the sign that He's approved of us. The only sign of approval is what He does on the cross. That's the only way we have any approval or standing before God. It is being covered in that blood that was shed there, the sacrifice that was made. That's the only way we are accepted, and actually more than accepted, we are then called into be His family, to be called by His name. It goes way beyond just barely getting into heaven. It's a complete payment, a restoration to be His children again. So we have this interesting thing. People always ask the question, well, how does God speak to us today? Sometimes we just need to take a step back and see the harbingers, see the things that are going around us, and see maybe how God is speaking to us. Now, I have some friends who have troubles with their marriage, or had troubles with their marriage. They went through a divorce or whatever they went through. Or they're going through something in their life where they lose someone special in their life, or something happens that's out of the ordinary. And if we can, for a moment, I know that it's difficult in that moment sometimes to step out beyond ourselves and our situation as we're asking God why. If we can step back from that a moment and just realize that God is trying to speak to the world, at least the world around us, through the things that are happening to us. And let me give you an example. A character in the Bible. His name was Hosea. He took a wife who was a harlot. Now, there's a lot of debate about whether or not she was a harlot when he married her, or whether she was prone to harlotry, or who turned out to be a harlot, but whatever. Regardless, he married this woman, and she was a harlot. In other words, she ran around on him. And this sounds like a terrible story. And yet God used that. He wrote down basically what God was saying to the nation of Israel. He realized he was in the representation of the place of, and don't take this wrong, he was in the place of God, and his wife was in the place of the church, or the children of Israel. And God spoke through this whole situation in Scripture, the Holy Scripture. That story was related in a way between God and His church and His people, the ecclesia. I find that fascinating. And we look at Scripture all the time this way. We see the story of someone's life, and yet we see, just like the story of Joseph, how he was separated from his brothers cast him out, and then in the end turned around to find that he was actually in charge and held their lives in his hand. So much about that story, I could tell you that it's just such a foreshadowing of Messiah, the first and second coming of Messiah. It's, again, a story of someone's life speaking beyond just what's happening with them, but it's speaking to the lives of those around them, and sometimes they don't even, maybe, now did he know he was in the midst of all that? Did he realize he was in the place of foreshadowing the Messiah? I doubt it. He was just trying to struggle through life. Did Hosea know when he took his wife that it was going to be this story of God's people and their interaction with him? I doubt it. He was probably heartbroken several times through the whole process. So I like to try to step back and look at what's happening, what's unfolding, and what those harbingers are that are telling us a story, kind of God kind of showing us, putting it right in front of us as to what's happening. Let me just look at the definition of a harbinger. One that indicates or foreshadows what is to come, a forerunner. One who provides or secures lodging for another, especially one who is an next procedure, definite notice of coming, something else. Yeah, it's one who or that which precedes and gives notice of the coming of some other person or thing, a forerunner or precursor. So it's a kind of a prediction. It's kind of a reflection of a prediction of what's about to happen. And here we have, in the news cycle right now, this is where I kind of stepped back and I kind of reflected on some things that are just all the craziness that's going on right now. And how do we put all this together? How do we reconcile all this wacky, crazy stuff? Well, before us, what are some of the things that are in the news right now? Some of the top stories that are in the news anyway, right now, the news cycle. One of the things is Jussi Smollett. Jussi Smollett, as some would pronounce his name. The hoax that is this trial. The hoax that he tried to push over on the world, trying to ride in the, for whatever selfish motivation he had behind this whole thing. And of course he was, the whole thing was, you know, riding on the wave of the Trump hatred and the hoax of white supremacy. And it's everywhere. It's behind every bush. I can't tell you right after the election, after Trump won, how many times I had some liberal friends on Facebook. I don't really even go on Facebook anymore, to be honest with you. I just don't go on there. I maybe go on there once or twice a week at the most, just to kind of see if I'm trying to catch up and make sure nobody had passed away that I knew. But that's about it. Once in a while, my wife will post something on there. I'll go on and try to catch up with all her pictures that she posts so I can like them all. And once in a while, I'll see some other stuff that people have posted. A couple of groups that I watch stuff on. But I don't get my news from there anymore. I don't get hardly anything from there. I hardly ever post anything on there. About once every 2 months or so. So, but initially, I was getting these posts from some friends and family that were way off in the left, and I'd see some things that... One of the things was this one gal down in southern Indiana who, right after the election, they painted on the side of her house and they tried to put sugar in her gas tank messed with some other things, and she's walking around showing some of the stuff that happened to her, and she's going to go ahead and move. She's going to move back out, and she started a GoFundMe account to get away from this place where she had moved into this area, and she had to move back home because she was just too terrified. She just couldn't stand to be here. Well, in the video, she wasn't terrified at all. She was walking around, wasn't scared at all. She was just walking around showing everything. The sugar was all over the outside of her tank. Didn't see any actual sugar, like, on the inside of her tank. It was around the outside lip there. The stuff that was painted on the side of the house, it was a rental house. Wasn't her house. A couple other things that had happened. One thing that was broken, that was not even, wasn't even just like something that wasn't even really broken. And I'm watching this thing and I'm thinking, this doesn't seem real. I just can't imagine someone would be so calm about all this. And come to find out, of course, it was being posted by everybody. I even got somebody posted it to me. Oh, look at what just happened in Southern Indiana. This was just like 2 or 3 days after the election. And of course, it turned out to be a hoax. No apologies. Never any apologies or retractions from anybody ever on any of these stories. And just hoax after hoax after hoax. Look at what just happened. See, they're everywhere. And just on to the next story. You ever follow up on this stuff to find out what happened? Oh yeah, by the way, that was a hoax. That was a hoax. That was a hoax. That was a scam. I hope you gave a lot of money to them in their GoFundMe account. And by the way, GoFundMe didn't cancel their account. They let them go ahead and collect their funds. Even though it was determined that it was a hoax. Absolute ripoff artists, con artists, delusional scammers. Pathetic. I spend a lot of time down in Atlanta these days. And it's in an area that I would say I'm definitely a minority there. I go into a restaurant, I'm typically probably the only white person in the restaurant. I have yet from any employee in any restaurant sensed any animosity towards me as a white man. It is the people that I see on the street occasionally dressed a certain way with their hair a certain way that I'm concerned would just as soon see me dead and think that somehow increases their superiority. When you want to talk about superiority of a race, there are those individuals out there. And I've heard this before. Black person can't be racist. Oh yeah. Okay, whatever. Again, the delusion. Go ahead and stick your head in the sand on that one. I've lived in Nigeria. I saw people being racist there from one tribe to the next. It's tribalism. They would treat one tribe as if they were the Samaritans, the lowlifes, that their tribe was superior to the other tribe. This was back in the 80s. I'm sure it's still going on. There is still slavery in Africa, by the way. Parts of Africa, they still buy and sell slaves. And in some places, it is perfectly legal. So, having said all of that, the delusion that continues to happen, let me just give you another example of the continued type of delusion and deception, knowingly doing things. You know, they come up with these slogans. Joe Biden says, I'm not going to shut down the economy. I'm going to shut down the virus. Now, somebody, he didn't think of that slogan. Somebody in his little think tank thought of that slogan and put it in his speech. And he said it several times after that. He said it probably 7 or 8 times. Said it on the campaign trail, and then he said it down several times before he got into office. And I think he said it down even when he got into after he got into office. I'm going to shut down the virus. Well, see, they had all this. They thought that they were in. I bet that they were just gung ho about what they were going to do with the country and the economy. They had the House, the Senate, basically had the Senate because they had the tie-breaking vote. And they had the presidency. They were going to run. They were just going to cram everything through and get it all done in one fell swoop because they knew that they probably would only have two years to do it. So they were going to get it done. They were excited. And then, especially with this whole, they were going to crush the virus. That was going to win them. It was going to launch them into the next 4 years after that. They had the first black woman president. They thought that they were going to have, you know, this is going to be great. Got this all lined up and all set up and ready to go. And the reason they thought they were going to crush the virus is because they thought they had a vaccine. What could be better timing? They were all giddy about this. I can guarantee you in their meetings, in their little huddles, in their little planning groups and think tanks, focus groups, they all thought, well, this is perfect. We're going to take over. The Democrats are going to win finally. Socialism's going to come into, we're going to usher socialism in on the wave of this anti-racism thing, anti-fascism thing. And the virus turned out to be a major flop. We have more deaths now under the Biden administration, which he continues to blame. See, and I hear people saying, well, this is all Biden's thing now. No, you see, they always have a way to spin something. And this is the thing that I don't think even the basic news media in this country doesn't get it. They act like, oh, they can't deny it now. They've really screwed up this time. I guess this is going to really look bad on them for 2022. I'm not counting 2022 out, folks. It's a long way before November of 2022. They have a political machine that includes the FBI, the CIA, the news media, at least 60% of it, 70% of it, MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, all has the narrative, all spinning the same story, and nobody's paying attention. And you don't think that has an influence when they can just take evidence of a crime, hold on to it till after an election, or hold on to it forever for that matter, to use it to manipulate their opponent or their person in office to get what they need, to control the narrative? You don't think that that's happening. You're living in the delusion because it's happening. Here's a good example, and this is just, I think this was on possibly on Fox. I can't remember what it was on. Might have been on Fox. Somebody pointed this out when they actually dug into the story. Now, I'm not saying everybody at Fox is all that great, but at least there's some balance there. But let's listen to this as they put it. What happened here? They're talking about gas prices. Well, I'll set this up for you. They're talking about gas prices and how it looks like Joe Biden brought the gas prices back down. They kept talking about transitory inflation. Transitory. It's transitory. It's just going to happen because we're in this transition between the COVID thing and everything. It's just transition. It's just transitory. This inflation is just transitory. Prices are going to come back down. It's going to blip up a little bit. According to Joe, it's just going to pop up a little bit and it's going to come right back down. We're in a perfect storm here, folks. We batten the hatches. Because what we're about to see is not transitory. Can't print $5 trillion and keep doing what you're doing and messing up with all the trade and the energy. This country runs on energy. And when you start screwing with that, you're screwing with everything. Let's see here what they found out about the gas prices as they showed this graph. It makes it look like Joe Biden was bringing the price back down. made it look like it was a huge drop. And they're throwing this little, everybody was throwing this, oh, thank you, Joe, for bringing the price down 7 cents. It wasn't even that much nationally. Let's see what this story says.
Take a look at this absolutely ridiculous graph right here. This was put out by the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee, where they praised the president with the caption, "Thanks, Joe Biden." At first glance, it appears to show a steep drop in the price of gas over 1 week in late November. But take a closer look at the left side of the graph right there, and you're going to see exactly what they did here. They literally stretched out the y-axis to show fractions of a cent in tiny little increments. So that steep decline you see in reality is just a drop of less than 2 pennies. It went from $3.395 per gallon to about $3.38 per gallon. Now,
okay, that's what they did. That's what they did. Can you just get your head wrapped around that for a moment in terms of what they're doing there? Now, at the top of all this heap of stuff going on, as I was alluding to earlier, we have a leader in the Democrat Party in the Congress, third in line for the president. If something today happened to, if Air Force One crashed and it landed on top of Kamala Harris, and we had only one person, the next person in line to assume the role of presidency, who would have their finger on the nuclear codes, it would be this woman right here.
Well, I take second place to no one in the Congress in my criticism of China's human rights record.
Yeah. She takes second place to no one in the Congress in her criticism of China and their human rights records. And she takes second place to no one in the payola that she gets from China either. Now listen to what she says here for a moment about how she says this. And the way she says it sounds very, very deceptive. Because she makes it sound as if the president, who at the time was Donald Trump. Now this was December 2nd that she said this stuff of this year. I'm talking just a few days ago. And she's still talking about Donald Trump. The news media, MSNBC, CNN, they still have TDS. They still have Trump derangement syndrome. And it still motivates everything that they do. They're still going after people from the Trump administration. They're still hoping for some kind of, I don't know, somebody that's going to squeal on him and say, oh, yeah, he did it. He did it. He did it. He needs to go to jail. Put Trump in jail. It's baloney. It's just the stories never end. And you talk about rhetoric and false information and fact-checking and all that stuff. They are the biggest perpetrators of the biggest hoaxes and most bogus information. And it's all scripted. It's all planned out, put in a way, spun in a way to make you, the listener, think that there's something else going on. Listen carefully to what she says here about what the president, the conversation that she had with the president, when she told the president to go tell, you go tell President Xi to, you know, what about the Uyghurs? Uh-oh, I just lost my spot.
I've even spoken to President Trump when he was at G20 in Japan a few years ago. I said, will you go up to the president of China and tell them that on the House and in the Senate, Democrats and Republicans have very serious concerns about what President Xi is doing to the Uyghurs. The next day he called me, said, I talked to the president, and he says the Uyghurs like being in those camps. That's what the president said. I said, well, that's what autocrats say.
Now, listen to how she says that. She makes it sound as if Trump agreed with Xi about it. Well, the president said they want to be there. And she goes, and that's what the president said. And she was implying that Trump said that. If you don't listen to that carefully, what Trump is saying was that was Xi's answer. And he was telling her what Xi said back to her. Now, who knows what the rest of the conversation was, but she implied that Trump was okay with that. And that it was actually Trump who said it. If you're not careful about how you listen to that. First time I heard it, it almost sounded like I sound like Trump said that they want to be there. That's not what happened at all. But that's the way it was made to sound. Because there is so much deception in these people's hearts. Because, again, the end justifies the means. And there's more. But wait, there's more. There's another point in this. This was Nancy Pelosi's press conference. I tried to listen to this whole thing. And I tell you, this woman has gone insane. She's got no business. If you just watch her as people are asking her questions, the look on her face, the things she does with her mouth, the way she smiles, the way she tries to act, and act is what I'm talking about. This person has no business being in office anywhere. And she's worth $190 million or some ridiculous amount, $160 million, whatever it is. She makes $170,000 a year. I don't know of anybody. Now, $170,000 a year is basically, I would call that upper middle class. Now, why Congress does not make a rule where they only get paid the average wage of full-time, the average full-time working wage of the nation. That's what they should get. But no, they get like three times that, three or four times the average working wage. Because, you know, they're so important. AOC went to Congress and she had the audacity to say that Congress people need help with housing. Housing is so expensive in D.C. Making $170,000 a year. Yeah, you need help with housing. You can go poke yourself in the eye. That's what you can go do. Because that's just, that kind of statement is just absolutely insulting. I think it's in here somewhere. No, I can't find it. I think it's right in here somewhere where somebody's asking her a question. Let's see if I can find it here.
It's a horrible situation. It's gotten worse under President Xi. And we've all worked together on that in a bipartisan way, House and Senate, over the years. So we will have the strongest possible Uyghur bill.
Now she's talking about...
One of the things that Senator Rubio has said is that the reason why the House is not voted on that Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act is because John Kerry has lobbied you and others not to act on it and to slow walk it so it doesn't complicate his climate change negotiations with China. Is that true?
No. It is not true.
Oh, she's mad.
You know, again, if you want to repeat the charges of the Republicans, that's up to you. But that is completely not true. As I said, for over 30 years, I have been considered the most disliked, they use stronger language than that, person in China because of my assault on their human rights.
I wish I had video in this show. And this is exactly why I'm considering going to Rumble. If I were to quit my other little side gig, and I would go back into this with a little bit more intensity, I would definitely be live I'd be on Rumble, probably live. And I'd be playing things like this with this woman's arrogance and pomp and... I'll refrain from saying too much here. Her attitude is beyond the pale. The facial expression she makes, the attitude she has, the way she pushes back on things, and the deception that lies there. Now, there's a point in this particular, and this happens every day. She does a press conference every day, And in this particular press conference, she had this whole incoherent thing where she's talking about the bill and how they're going to move it from one house to the next, and they're going to do this with that, and they're going to. It was absolutely incoherent and just babbling gibberish. She gets people's names mixed up. She gets people's offices, positions mixed up. She doesn't know what she's talking about on the bill and how it's going to go back and forth. And it is. And then she talks about the, you know, why are the Republicans holding up? This is the part I was trying to find here, is why the Republicans are holding up. I think it's right in here. Let's see if I got it here.
The House and the Senate can get it done.
The message is that the obstacle to moving forward of what we want to do
Mitch McConnell here now.
In the person of Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, she's going to blame him
now
for
this. You like to make it look like, oh, we can't get things done. No, we've been trying to come together.
See, here's what she says. Oh, like we've been trying, we can't get this done. Well, it's because the Republicans won't cave. It's not that your idea of the Republicans working with you is they have to cave on everything. The only way they can work with you is if they agree to everything you want to do. That's not why the Republicans are there. It was just the opposite when you guys were in the minority. Other Republicans won't work with us because you guys won't move. And besides that, we have two very, very differing opinions here on philosophies on how government, what government is and how it should work. You cannot combine. The reason we here, and here's the whole thing that nobody's talking about. Everybody says, well, I wish they could work together and get some stuff done. No, actually, I just assume that they didn't do anything. I am more and more convinced that that is the only way to fix the problem is just to stop everything and stop them from doing anything at all. Because the more they do, the worse it gets. And here's my thinking on this. This is why I think that the divide becomes greater and greater, because the more socialism raises its ugly head, the more we realize that there's a huge difference between that and the independence and the individual rights that our country was founded on. And there's no mixing of the two. The two cannot combine and create and do anything because they are diametrically opposed. Big government, government programs, the guaranteed income, the centralization of government, healthcare, schools and education, energy, everything. The centralization of all those things, i.e. the federal government, putting all that in Washington's hands, is diametrically opposed to the way our founders envisioned and created our country to be. They wanted it to be grassroots up, ground up. That the local governments had more authority. However, they still don't have the right to encroach on certain unalienable rights. The federal government was there to protect us and our individual rights, to allow states and communities to establish rules and regulations and laws and all those kinds of things, to govern the property rights. However, not to step across the line. If they did, the federal government then was there to protect the individual by upholding the Constitution. That's what it was there for, period. This idea that the biggest job of government is to keep us safe is baloney. Because it's not. It's to protect the rights of the individual. Now, of course, I had it up here at one point. I don't have it up here anymore. Great quote by... I thought I had it here on my screen, but it's apparently accidentally cut it out somehow. I think it was probably a mistake. I cut up a whole bunch of stuff off here, copied and pasted some stuff and lost some stuff. Anyway, the quote by Kennedy, the rights of every man are threatened when the rights of one man are diminished. And that sums up the idea of individual rights. Groupthink and group rights are special rights. Regardless of what your sexual orientation or your how you identify or how you what race or color or creed or what you believe or what your religion is, regardless of any of those things, the government is not supposed to make rules that protect you if you are white, if you are black, if you are Native American, if you are gay or straight. They are supposed to make rules and laws to actually negative liberties, or not negative liberties, but negative laws that protect you from the government because you are you. For no other reason. The whole argument over abortion is, when do you become you? When do you become a life? Because you have the right to life as soon as you are a you, as soon as you are a person. You have the right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and all the other rights that go along with the Bill of Rights. That's when you become you, and that's when you become special. Every single human being has special rights. They're the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You shouldn't be overly protected because you belong to a certain group. Everyone has the right to be criticized. Everyone has the right to be offended. You can't start calling someone, this is hate speech, so now we're going to add 3 years onto your sentence because you hated the person when you killed them. Oh, gee, I wish I would have loved that person when I killed them. The insanity continues to go downhill. And I just, and yes, folks, my show is probably become a little bit more serious than it used to be. But, you know, these are serious times. So, there you go. Got that to say about, you know, everything. You know, I guess I didn't really get into it much, but I see the Jesse Smollett thing. Well, in fact, shut the music off for a moment. Shut the music down. Just shut it off. I'm not going to stop the show. I'm going to keep the show. This is a first for me. I'm going to keep the show going. I had to tell my producer to shut the music off. I was just getting to this whole thing of the Harbinger. And the Jesse Smollett thing and what a deception it is. And all the players involved. I could get into a whole show, probably, just about the description of each person in this whole thing and how it plays out and how and the example that it is in terms of the way things are going in our country right now. The news media initially jumped all over this story. CNN, MSNBC, they all jumped all over it saying, oh, see here, they were all on Jesse's side. They were all propping him up and giving him kudos. Feeling sorry for him, saying how terrible it was that these people attacked him. Well, then when the truth started coming out, most of them started denying they ever said any of those things. Brian Stelter was one of the worst ones. He's the guy who came out and said, Avenatti needs to be our next president. Oh, he was all about Avenatti being our next president. Oh, he's a great guy. And of course, Avenatti got hauled off in handcuffs after we find out what a sleazebag the guy is. But he was their champion. This is their champion. And all of a sudden, you don't hear about him anymore. They really pick him. They just know how to pick him, don't they? I keep having this gut feeling that Joe Biden probably will not make it much more than a year into his presidency here. I think there's something seriously about to happen. And I don't know, the facade that continues to be propagated to the people with all the sayings, just trying to tell us that things aren't the way they just think that if they say something, it makes it so. Gas prices are coming down. Inflation is transitory. There's no problem with the supply chain. We're crushing the virus. Well, at least don't talk about that because they're not crushing the virus. If you're vaccinated, you won't get the virus. This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Recently, by the way, Corona. Let's talk about that for a moment. There was recently a cruise ship with 3,700 people on board, all of which, cabin, crew, everybody, they were all vaccinated. Fully vaccinated, however you want to define that now, whether that's with the booster or not, I don't know. 17 people that they know of ended up with the Rona. And they had to quarantine the boat. And you couldn't get off the boat until you were tested positive and could get off. Or tested negative, I'm sorry. One individual even was tested with what they believe was the Omicron virus. Now, what they're not telling you about the Omicron, everybody's a cron. You're a cron, I'm a cron. We'll all be cron. What they're not telling you about this is that the symptoms, nobody has been hospitalized with this thing. Now, there's still some confusion about whether or not anybody's gotten it that has not been vaccinated. It's apparently, from what I understand, only vaccinated people have gotten it. Because this would be the case also in the boat. If the boat was everybody was vaccinated and somebody had the Omicron virus. So I'm assuming that. Now, the problem is, if you're vaccinated and you have the virus, you're still carrying it and you don't know it. And this goes right along with the whole thing of the tests that were done, the actual studies that were done with groups of 6,000 people, 6,000 people who were vaccinated and 6,000 people who were not vaccinated. The rate of infection, they make it sound like breakthrough infection among vaccinated individuals, breakthrough infection. As if it's a really rare thing. They imply that it's a rare thing. It's a breakthrough. Well, somebody just broke through. The rate of infection was the same. Now, here's the problem with that. They have also tested recovered individuals from corona. The rate of reinfection is about 10 times less. They're not talking about that. In other words, breakthrough infection among recovered or natural immunity people has been way less than vaccinated individuals. Now, part of the reason for that is because the vaccine wears off, and it seems that natural immunity stays in you. And the reason for that is because of what Dr. Malone said, that they are using a vaccine that is basically getting its effectiveness. The way I understand is, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a life coach. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm just a guy with a microphone. I'm not even a very good guy with a microphone. I just picked up this microphone somewhere. And what they're finding is, where was I going with that? The rate of infection among recovered, unvaccinated individuals is less. And they have a tendency to not be carriers. Now, the whole problem with the vaccine, this is where I was getting at. The whole problem with the vaccine is that it wanes. Apparently, the immunity drops off much quicker. And you have no natural immunity and here's the reason. The reason is because, according to Dr. Malone, what he believes is happening is that they're using this vaccine, the mRNA vaccines, they're using it to create cytotoxicity against the virus instead of natural immunity. Antibodies, natural antibodies against the that's my understanding. Now, I could be way off on all that. I probably am, because I have been before. That's where it's going. It gets back to this, again, it's this whole thing of deception. You cannot trust what they're saying. If they say that the vaccine is safe and effective, And it's not being effective, not in the way we think of vaccines. Okay, folks, this is where I run into lots of arguments with people. Oh, yeah, but it works. It keeps people out of the hospital. Well, that's not what a vaccine was for. That's just a perpetual thing we're going to have to keep taking in order to stay out of the hospital. We thought that the vaccine was going to crush the virus, shut down the virus. Well, it's not doing that. That's why I say it's a failure. Not a dismal failure. It's just a failure. And now they're having problems with other issues, Bari syndrome and all kinds of other things that are starting to pop up all over the place. And with that said, have a great day, everybody. God bless, folks. Keep praying for the nation. See you later.
The omnibus bill, but the Republicans will not come to the table to discuss it.